Hey, Mike.
Hi, Caleb. How are you?
I'm doing well.
What are you drinking tonight?
Tonight, I am enjoying a Sazerac, so with some bullet bourbon, rye, and yeah, it's good. Tasty.
Excellent. Excellent.
What about you?
I am drinking a Shruff's End. It is a smoky apple cocktail. It's got some Laphroaig, some Laird's Bonded Apple Brandy, and some Benedictine. It's from the Death and Company book, and it is smoky and delicious.
You still have better cocktails than me. I still need to get some specialty liquors.
Well, one of these days, I want to get some that are actually relevant to the episode that we're going to talk about. Some sort of
That'd be match up the level. Naming. Nice. So this week was kind of fun. Both of us went on test drives of the Model X.
Yes, the Model X is available for test drives here in Palo Alto. I don't know how widely available it is in the rest of the world, but we were able to grab some slots to take it on the road this week, which was very exciting.
Yeah, that was really fun. I had been able to drive a Model S before. I did a test drive at the Palo Alto store, the Stanford store, about 3 or 4 months ago. I was just sort of had been going into the store every once in a while when I was visiting the shopping center, and was just like, I always want to try it. And so I went online and made the reservation. And so I drove the S, and that was really fun. But I wanted to, I knew you were going to do one, so I wanted to book one as well. So I also did an X, and I did that today. So we both have very fresh impressions of the Model X. So today's episode will be about the Tesla test drive experience and everything about that and our impressions of being in the vehicles for, you know, listeners who haven't been able to drive a Tesla before, or in particular Model X, sort of what our own impressions, our humble impressions of it were. So, so when did you decide to do this, and what was sort of the impetus besides the show? Was there anything else going on?
Well, you know, the show, obviously, and then just the fact that we have the ability to drive these vehicles around here. We actually went to each of the Palo Alto Tesla stores. There are two. There's one located in the Stanford Shopping Center, which is a outdoor mall, right on the, or off the Stanford campus. And then there's one a few miles away down El Camino, which is more of a traditional car dealership, which is the one you went to, next door to the McLaren dealership.
And a Subaru, just
to set the context for people who aren't familiar with Palo Alto.
Yeah, exiting in the vehicle, I saw all these supercars, and I was like, this is a weird place. So what was sort of the first impressions of the test drive experience?
Well, I mean, booking it was really easy. I went to the website, and you put in your zip code, and it shows you which stores are closest to you. There were three options here. There was the two Palo Alto ones, and then there's this one in Burlingame, which is a couple of towns north of here. And I went to the Stanford Shopping Center one because that's the one that's most accessible by train, which is how I get around, ironically.
Nice.
And so I took the train down there and then walked over to the Stanford Shopping Center. The booking experience was really easy. Someone called that morning to confirm that I still wanted the appointment, that I was still coming in for the test drive. Everyone was very friendly. It wasn't a high pressure environment. I didn't get that car dealership feel. It was more helpful and educational, which I thought was pretty nice. The store itself is, well, in this case, I went to the one in the shopping center, and it's pretty much like wide open. There's no real facade to the store. It's all open to the outside, and you go in, and they had a Model X. They had two Model S's in the store, and then the deconstructed chassis as well there for show, with like the engines, the motors in it. Sorry. Yeah. I'm conflating motors and engines. We're going to get feedback on that.
Yeah.
They had the motors in it. And then those are just the ones that are on display in the store. And they have a little kind of velvet rope cordoned off area in the parking lot, right next to the Brooks Brothers store, that has the, I think they had three S's and one X for test drives. And
what color was the X?
It was some sort of electric blue. Mm. It was a really saturated, bright blue.
Yeah, ours was blue too. That must be their test drive color.
It's like the blue straps on the developer Apple Watch. It's some sort of, you know, this is a test drive color, maybe.
So I had a similar experience. I booked online, which I thought was really nice, similar to making an Apple Genius Bar appointment. Being able to go online and book it, I'm not a big fan of calling, so being able to book online was great. The other nice thing is that you set the exact hour window, so you pick a particular slot. So when I arrived about 10 minutes early, let them know I was there, and they're like, great, your co-pilot will be with you momentarily. So I thought it was kind of nice. They had a specific name for the person who is going to be in the vehicle with you as a
co-pilot.
They're
explicitly not calling them a salesman or saleswoman.
Yeah, exactly. They're just sort of, you know, there along for the ride with you, kind of like a Disney ride sort of, you know, theming level of a co-pilot. So I thought that was kind of cool. And then they came out and asked if I was just going to be driving, or I went with my girlfriend and asked if she wanted to drive, and she was too nervous to drive, didn't want to take on the responsibility of driving that car around. So I was the only one to drive. So I gave them my license, and usually when I've done test drives in the past, they're like, great, stand here. And then they run back to their sales room and then copy all the information and photocopy it. But what was nice is they actually have a little mini iPad mini, and they scanned the license. And so it sucked in all the information, and they had a lot of my information already since I'd booked online. So it was very quick. And they then pulled up a little waiver, and I accepted the terms and conditions.
A little waiver that says, if you crash this $100,000 vehicle, you are liable.
Yeah, I looked at it briefly, but then I felt a little bad, like trying to read it all, or because he was still the person I was talking to was still holding the iPad. So I was like, okay, I click accept, and he's like, great, here we go.
Yeah, I looked at the first two sentences, and I was just YOLO. I'm like, okay, let's go for it.
I know. I really don't know what I got into, and I don't really drive that much, and I don't have personal insurance right now. So,
and the drivers on the roads are not the best in this area.
No, and like a car you're not familiar with. So anyways, I'm glad everything went smoothly. Everything ended up fine. But I thought the overall just sort of process of getting the vehicle was pretty smooth. And, you know, just in comparison to other test drives I've done where you sort of wander into the showroom. And because I looked around, you can't book a test drive online the same way for Tesla on, you know, Audi or BMW or Mercedes. And, you know, in thinking about it, I realized, oh, it makes sense because the dealers are not associated with the manufacturer in the same way that Tesla is. So when you're on the Tesla site, I mean, they know what the availability is. They know all the different locations, and they are incented to push you to the dealer, and they don't care. To the store, rather. But for others, you know, you can sometimes, like the best I found was Mercedes let you sort of book or say you were interested in a test drive on a certain day, and then they would call you to confirm. So they obviously were just going to pass your information to a local Mercedes dealer. But I just thought it was a really nice touch, and definitely made the entire experience feel very smooth and nice that we knew we were going to be able to drive. We knew the car we were going to be in was the X. And they were expecting us, so just felt pretty nice. And there was no, like you said, it was very low pressure. Even you know, just getting into the vehicle, they're like, "Great, let me show you around the car." They were just very excited to even just sort of show us the vehicle and show us how it worked and get us into it.
Yeah, they asked. I don't know if they did the same for you, but they asked me right off the bat, "Are you actually interested in buying, or is this just educational?" I think that was the word they used.
Yeah, that was the word they used. Educational. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in our case, we are actually looking to buy something. We've been looking at other crossovers mostly. Mm-hmm. At the moment, I think my wife is partial to the Audi Q, one of the Qs, the Q5, I think.
Yeah. Which is a medium one.
Yeah, that's a pretty popular vehicle around here. You really, if you're not seeing Priuses or BMW 3 Series, you're probably seeing a Q5 around
here.
There's
a Q5 right in my parking lot right next to me, in the assigned spot next to me is a Q5.
Nice, yeah. I mean, it's a really nice vehicle. It's probably, I mean, in my opinion, I think it's probably one of the nicest looking, nicest styled of the crossover vehicles. But
yeah, I agree.
We're getting into subjective territory here. But yeah, it was... I definitely have noticed in looking at these other vehicles that you definitely notice a difference in the sales experience at the higher end vehicles than you do at the lower end vehicles. Hmm. It's still a very kind of awkward and hostile almost experience at most of the lower end vehicles. I think we looked at like a Subaru and maybe one of the Mazdas.
So those would be in the lower end category?
Yeah. Subaru? I should probably specify. I'm considering those to be lower end. And then we looked at like some of the Audis and the BMWs and a Lexus. Mm-hmm. It was a little more of a high-end experience there.
Just sort of to keep score, for the pre, you know, getting in the vehicle experience, where does Tesla rank up in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I'm not a big fan of talking to people either. So being able to do it all online and having everything set up for me and just showing up at my appointed time, that was the best I could possibly ask for.
And did you have reserved times for the others, or were those just sort of walk-ins on the weekend hoping to get a test drive?
We just walked in on the weekend looking for a test drive.
Okay.
But that was pretty ad hoc. I didn't actually check to see if we could. We were just kind of driving around doing some errands on the weekends, and we're on sort of a no real time frame test drive thing. So we've for like 6 months, whenever we're interested in something, we'll just pop in and take a look or take a drive.
Got it. Cool. Yeah. So maybe you can start a bit on your first experience, since I had ridden in an S, and this was the first time you were in a Tesla, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So you get in the car and then what happens?
Getting into the car was a little interesting because they have four, like I said, they have four spots sort of cordoned off in the parking lot of this shopping mall. Mm-hmm. And the cars were really jammed in there because they're pretty large vehicles and these were pretty small spots.
More parking spots.
Yeah, there was some shimmying involved to try and get towards the door. And then the guy had the fob, and he pushed the button for the back door instead of the front door by accident, and so that Falcon door started opening up. Uh-huh. And they apparently open like halfway, and then you have to open up you have to push it again, I think, to open it up the rest of the way. So that opened up halfway, and right off the bat, that showed you that even with 6 inches of space between that car and the next car, the Falcon doors can open up. So
did they get all the way open, or did they end up stopping?
Then stopped like at the sort of halfway point.
Okay. Because he might have opened it up to the rain mode area. They have two settings, apparently, two defaults. One for rain, so if there's rain happening, it will help shield you. And then they have another that's like the fully open. So that's cool. They were able to get it all the way open. So
yeah.
They didn't seem to use summon then to pull the car out. That's too bad.
No. We actually got in the vehicle before being able to do the summon. I don't know if that's... there was actually a car blocking us. And a woman was asking for directions to the Tesla store, and he was pointing it out to her that it's right there.
Yeah.
But then it turned out she was actually looking for the Palo Alto store,
not
the Stanford store. So she was actually looking for the one that you were at.
Yeah, that's an easy mistake.
And then
a couple miles away.
And then she got in her car and then just sat there for like 5 minutes.
Clearly plugging in the GPS.
Yeah, exactly. But all the while blocking us in. So I had to kind of maneuver around her, and then he had to go back and put the little velvet rope back on to block off the spot. So it was a little bit eventful getting out of there. But the first thing that struck me, I sat in the vehicle, did all the usual things of like adjusting, you know, the seat adjustments are pretty standard for that little like multi-way joystick thing on the side, mm-hmm. and adjust the mirrors. And as soon as I looked forward, the thing that immediately struck me was, oh my God, I'm in a bubble.
Like
this crazy windshield comes up and over your head, and like, I mean, you actually have to like you can't just looking straight up, you can't even see the roof, like you have to like turn around. It's like you're completely enclosed in glass. It was wild.
It was so cool. I mean, that was the first thing as well. I knew that was a thing. I mean, I had watched a lot of videos and seen and read impressions of the Model X, and obviously the windshield windscreen comes up a lot, so I was prepared intellectually for, okay, this is going to be quite encompassing of my view. But when I actually sat in the vehicle, I was just so impressed it's just the idea of being able to see so much. And I think a lot of people had been saying, well, what's the point of having so much above you when there's nothing happening above you? But there is something very viscerally fun and cool about seeing so much of the sky and the trees. And when you're driving, it also allows you to see so much of what's coming down the road. And it just sort of made it feel like I wasn't having tunnel vision. I was just sort of more in a go-kart or something and protected, but in this amazing field of view.
Yeah, I think and for me, I mean, I'm on the taller side. I'm not super tall, but in some cars, depending on how the seat is set up, like we rent a lot of cars when we travel, and in a lot of cars, they have this like sloping windshield, I guess for aerodynamics, and a higher seat, and I end up not being able to see the stoplight especially if I'm first in line at a stoplight. I frequently have to like bend down to like, unless they have one of those like auxiliary stoplights kind of halfway down the pole on the side. Yeah. But especially going home to the Boston area, you never really know what you're going to get for streetlights. And frequently they're in spots where you just can't see them. And yeah, that as someone who has to like kind of bend down to see lights on occasion, that would be extremely helpful.
And I thought the driving position was very comfortable. The one sort of thing I noticed about just sitting in the vehicle and very initial impressions was that the rear view mirror was very small.
Yes.
And when I was looking in it, it felt like the back was very far away.
The rear view or the side view?
The rear view.
Okay.
Yeah. I just thought I was looking down this extremely long bowling alley and I couldn't see out the back very well.
It was very dark too.
Yeah, it was extremely dark. Yeah, it was very dark and tinted. And then I was looking in it and it was very small. So that was a little bit unexpected. And then the side view mirrors were fine to adjust. I didn't have any issues with those.
I thought they were a little bit small. I guess that's an aerodynamics trade-off, but I feel like my current car is like this too, where they're just kind of small. I'd much rather have a larger mirror back there to see, like, I mean, that's the blind spot, right? Like, I'd like to be able to sort of see my blind spots. One thing that also struck me too, and this was related to the rearview mirror and the enormous bubble windshield, is because the rearview mirror is a smart rearview mirror, it has like automatic dimming, and I imagine there's probably like camera or sonar or something in there as well. There's this about inch and a half wide plastic piece like coming from the roof all the way down the bubble to that rearview mirror, and it I just wish they could have done something else with that. Like, it looks so tacky and hacked on.
That's the camera for the autopilot.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's in that module right there. I originally had thought that was in the grill, but it's actually on all the vehicles. It's mounted right there in the rearview mirror.
I guess that makes sense, because then your windshield wipers are going to be clearing that off anyways. Yeah. So, you know, if you can see, the car can see. But I just thought I understand the need for it. I just wish they could have done something better about it, because I think that, like, it's a pretty big piece of plastic coming all the way down. It almost looks like it's just sort of floating there. And I mean, you don't really notice it as you start driving, but when you stop and look around, it's just kind of, it's almost like when you have an open concept house, but there's one giant pole in the middle between. It's like, oh, if we just could have removed that one pole, it would be perfect.
Well, that's the other same issue with the visors. They are just on this massive glass windshield, and so they're just magnets.
That's interesting. I didn't even notice the visors because they were folded off to the side.
Yeah, so those will fold in, and they're magnetic, and it's a whole thing. The other thing, initial impression, the seat I was in, at least, was extremely comfortable for my size and shape or whatever. Like, the upper bolster was very comfortable. I felt it in my upper back a lot of support up there, and the seats were just very, very comfortable. More so even than some of the recent nice cars that I've been in. I would say it was definitely the most comfortable seat I've ever sat in a vehicle. And then I asked my girlfriend, who was in the second row because the co-pilot was in the passenger seat, and she liked the seat. Her impression afterwards, though, was that they're very slim, so just not much width. And what was interesting about that is we were in a configuration where there were two back seats.
So that was the six-seater.
Yeah, and they talked about that a lot during the test drive, the six and the seven and the five. But apparently in the five's configuration, they'll have three of those all side by side. So it doesn't move to a bench. It's just three captain seats next to each other.
Right. And you get more storage space in the back in the five configuration.
Yeah, exactly.
The seats take up space even when they're folded down. So they had those come out and you get a little more depth to your storage area.
Yeah, so. But it was really nice. I mean, there was just so much space in between those two. There was a ton of space. I mean, we were joking afterwards. You could just put a dog in there, and then a big dog would just sit in between, you know, two kids or something. If you had a family sort of situation with it. So we pulled out, and again, like, just this mental break where I was looking for a way to turn on the car, and there isn't one. And you just put it into drive and there's no sound. I mean, I know intellectually that there isn't going to be any sound, but the starting and stopping process of the Tesla still really, it's not a Tesla problem. It's just, you know,
yeah, it's like almost
driving
a little...
for a decade plus, you know, you're just not used to this mechanic of not pushing a button or turning a key and hearing the engine and feeling the car vibrate, knowing, okay, it's time to put it in reverse or drive.
There's a little ceremony that's supposed to happen, right? The starting of your vehicle and makes a noise and now you can drive.
Yeah. Did you feel that too? Like, I mean,
yeah.
It was weird. And so, yeah, we backed out and the rear view camera turned on and that thing was super high resolution. The car we have now has a rear view camera, but it's 6 or 7 years old, so it's not very good. So this one was great. And then we just turned onto the street and super, super comfortable driving. And, you know, over and over, and I think we'll probably talk about this a lot, just didn't feel like a 5,500-pound vehicle. It felt extremely nimble, very flat, and just extremely comfortable.
One thing I thought that was interesting. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No. That I mean, just like the driving dynamics, even just in, you know, regular streets with traffic lights and whatnot, was just very capable. And it's a pretty large vehicle.
Yes.
And I didn't feel the normal anxiety I do when I go and rent a car and they end up putting me in the big, you know, Ford Expedition or something. I'm not happy with that decision. I know some people love that. I would prefer my car to be as small as possible and no smaller. So the X is not sort of the type of car I would pick for myself. But after I was driving it for just a few minutes, I felt pretty comfortable with the size of it. And I think, you know, there's certainly a lot of safety features and the autopilot and all these things and auto detection that made me more comfortable with, you know, the risks of a bigger car, bigger blind spots and changing lanes and just sort of all that. But I really did like the driving position. I think it was definitely the being slightly higher up was really, really enjoyable. And the really large windscreen gave me a much more confidence that I could tell what was going on in the vehicle.
Yeah. 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 I agree. So where we went, the Stanford Shopping Center is right on Sand Hill Road, which is, if people know about technology and venture capital firms, that's where historically they've all been located. So we went down Sand Hill Road to get to 280, I-280, the expressway. And driving that first part, I was taking the same sort of thing. Like it was a big, I was a little worried about the size of the vehicle and that melted away right away. Like it was, yeah. It was very easy to drive. One thing that struck me is when I see Teslas driving around, when I'm walking, they're completely silent. Like they're just these quiet, like sort of, I almost got hit by one once crossing a street because I didn't even hear it coming. And this was like years ago when they first came out and now I'm a little more observant for quiet
silent vehicles.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of Priuses around.
Yeah. And the Leafs.
Prii. Yeah. There's a lot of those around here. So. But I was kind of taken by the fact that it actually wasn't all that quiet inside. Like,
yeah.
It still was quiet. It definitely had, decent like noise dampening. But the roads, the side roads and then Sand Hill Road are in pretty rough shape. Like a lot of the roads around here aren't all that great. And which especially odd given the amount of Ferraris that drive up and down Sand Hill Road. But, the road's pretty rough. So I was hearing a lot of the road noise come through. Probably also compounded by the fact that we had the sport suspension on and not the smoother air suspension.
I was expecting less road noise. I was expecting it to be more quiet and silent. And also in the S, when I first drove it, that was my expectation. And I agree, I was a little underwhelmed at the cabin quietness. And I even asked in both test drives to turn off the AC to really hear what it sounded like with nothing on, because today was a little bit warmer day, and so the AC kind of had to work pretty hard to stay at the, you know, 68 degrees or whatever they had it set to. So
yeah, same. We had the, I went during the heat wave earlier this week. So yeah, we had the AC cranked up.
Yeah. So it was, it's not as quiet as it seems like it will be from the outside. Cause I agree, when I've seen them creep out, it is very quiet when you're stopped. So I think that is super impressive. When you're at a stoplight and it's stopped, it is silent and that's very comfortable. And so stop and go traffic, I feel like would be much more peaceful. But at road speed, 45 miles plus, it didn't feel that different than, you know, a nice car.
Right. And I think that's probably the important thing to circle back around to, is that we've driven a couple of times in the Q5, and that is a surprisingly quiet vehicle for having the combustion engine in there. And it's similar to what the Model X was when you're inside. Like, it's a similar level, at least, you know, given that it was a couple months apart. So I don't know how accurate my recollections are, but it's not that it was loud or unpleasant ride. It was just, I was expecting quieter, probably also because it also had these enormous 22 inch wheels going over potholes. It was probably as quiet as it could be, but it was just more of an interesting, unexpected take.
So what was your impression of the touchscreen?
I
know you'd been sort of curious about the efficacy and sort of virtue of that screen. So
yeah,
conversations.
I was just about to circle back around to that. So I felt like so my general opinion in driving vehicles is more that a tactile feedback is important. So, you know, having a button that, you know, because you're not supposed to be paying 100% of your attention to what you're doing with your hand, you're supposed to be driving. So, you know, being able to kind of reach out, and even if you're 5% looking and knowing that, okay, I just grabbed the AC knob and I'm turning that up. I think that that's something that's lost going to a completely touchscreen thing. But when we were first getting started, he was setting up all of the preferences. So mm-hmm. you have what do you want for suspension? What do you want for your acceleration mode? There are a few other regenerative braking was another one.
Yeah. Which one did you put it in? Did you put in regular?
We had it on the low setting. I think the options were standard and low, if I remember correctly.
I put ours on standard cause I wanted to feel the stronger, default, which I think is standard.
Yeah. I normally drive a manual transmission car when I drive. So I was already I'm used to being able to coast when I'm not doing anything, and I'm used to the car not taking off on its own when I let go of the brake.
Oh, so did you put creep off?
Right. So that was the other thing, is we had the creep off, or I think they call it hill assist or something.
No, they call it creep.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
There was a hill assist.
There's a hill assist also. If you push the brake down, it'll put a hold on it.
Okay.
Yeah. So just for everyone who's listening, the creep is this, you know, if you're in an automatic, which is the most popular transmission style for vehicles in the U.S. and growing across the world, when you let off the brake, even if your foot isn't on the accelerator, the car will sort of creep forward. And
it's kind of like self-driving, but without any steering.
Yeah, exactly. It just sort of goes a little bit. And so it can be helpful, obviously, when you're doing backing up. And so people were used to it. And so with Tesla, there is no engine that's, you know, constantly spinning and putting pressure on the transmission. So the original was that you have to push on the accelerator for it to move in any direction. And they found that some people were just uncomfortable with that, being used to having an automatic transmission with an internal combustion. So they introduced this software feature called creep that will try and mimic that. And sort of when you let off of the brake, it will creep forward slightly. So I had creep on. And that was what they sort of said was, you know, if you drive automatic, you should try it with creep on. So I was fine with that. And you know, I didn't feel any of the fakeness of it. It just felt totally normal. So they did a good job. What about you? How did that feel, those settings that they put you in?
Yeah, it felt good. It was normal to me. I don't like the car kind of taking off on its own. I feel like that's a bug, not a feature. So which actually came in handy, because a couple of times I've caught myself not quite paying attention enough to the road and engaged in a little too much conversation with my co-pilot about the car and about the features.
Oh, wow.
And at one point, someone was honking the horn at me on the off-ramp because I was not merging into traffic properly.
Yikes.
Because I was stopped. I was not creeping.
Okay.
But yeah, no, it was...
The touchscreen, though, final impressions.
Yeah, it was the weirdest part coming from a software development world is how web it looked. Even to the point of it being like little modal window comes up with like toggle switches, and there's like a circular X in the corner to dismiss the modal.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole thing made me feel like I was going to die because I know how poorly done most web software is and how many bugs there are all over the place. And making it for someone who works in that field, making it look like a web interface was terrifying. Mm-hmm. I would have appreciated something that looked nothing like any of the crap that I'm familiar with, because then I wouldn't kind of bring along the baggage of low expectations.
Yeah, I mean, but it definitely has that feeling. I did the same thing. I pulled up the settings for the car and looked at the specifics for it. And, you know, you go in the settings and it pulls up a modal of the vehicle and has that little X in the corner, like you mentioned. And it certainly feels very iPad app-like and web app-like.
Like old iPad app, too, because it looked more like an iOS 6 interface. It hadn't gotten the flat treatment yet.
It has not been flattened. The UI is still a couple years dated. One thing I will point out that I thought was really great was at some point I was manipulating with the side. I wanted to see the windshield wipers to see how big they were, to see sort of what they swept on the large windscreen.
Oh, yeah.
And so I did that, and then accidentally somehow I had gotten the brights turned on, and I saw the little indicators in the display, and I was like, well, I think I turned on the brights. Like, I don't know how I did that. And so the co-pilot was trying to help me, you know, she sort of turned her hand. I was trying to think about where it was on the stalk and couldn't figure it out. She's like, oh, I'll just fix it. And so she started tapping on the screen and was able to turn off my brights from the screen. And, you know, that was just sort of a really small example of everything in this car is driven by software. And everything in this car that you touch and manipulate with physical controls is by wire. That is not the only place it's happening. That is just a control point for you to feel comfortable as a human being in this vehicle to deal with the things that are happening. But the touchscreen can do almost everything. One of the other things that I was asking about was sort of what's special about the X over the S, just to, you know, have them give me a little bit more of the sales pitch and hear what things they talked about. And one of the things she was mentioning was that the seats are ventilated. And I was like, oh, cool. Can you try to turn that on? And so, yeah, she just sort of turned on the ventilated seats for all of us from the touchscreen while I was driving. So I felt like the touchscreen is actually really compelling. I had the rear view camera on one half of it. So what's cool is the touchscreen will split into two components, the top and bottom, if you want. So you can have the music on top and the rear view camera on the bottom running all the time, or vice versa, or your phone or other things. So I had the rear view camera on in the bottom so I could always see out the back of the vehicle, which was kind of neat.
Yeah. How did you feel about that? I did that for a little while too.
I liked it. She had mentioned that she doesn't like it because it makes her feel a little distracted. My co-pilot, I liked it a lot. I didn't look at it very much. But I feel like I definitely glanced at it when I was changing lanes on the highway.
Right. It kind of compensates for that tiny little rearview mirror. It's essentially like a larger rearview mirror, just lower in the car.
Yeah. And like much more wider aperture, because you can just see so much more.
But it does not have any sort of side cameras. I had asked about that, like, do they have any, because like I was concerned about blind spots, especially after signing that indemnity waiver,
right.
So I was wondering if there was any way to bring on like what's behind me to the left or behind me to the right, but there is apparently no way to do that. Apparently it relies on sonar for that stuff.
Yeah, I didn't even notice any little indicators on the side view mirrors for the blind spot detection. Some of the cars have that. I didn't notice that. But what I realized was like, oh, that's dumb because they have the sonar in the actual display. So
right.
One of the cool things is as you're driving, you've got the big touch screen, but then you've got a mini screen in front of you. And so instead of traditional speedometer and tachometer for RPM and all the ancillary little lights, you have another screen. And we know it's screens, but it doesn't present itself to be a screen. You don't touch it. But it has your digital readout of your speed, and it shows your vehicle in the center. And then it has two auxiliary panels, one on the left, one on the right, that can be switched out dynamically from the steering wheel. Mine didn't have any of those on by default. It sounded like you had some of those on.
Yeah. Yeah. Those, all that information was on. It had like how far we've been going, how many kilowatt hours we've used, how much since last charge, total miles we've traveled. It had a battery power indicator that was identical to an iPhone, where it's like a little like AAA or AA battery with a green like status bar going through. Had like the number of miles we've traveled. The 90 degrees was the temperature outside.
Oh my gosh.
I thought that was pretty interesting. And then on the right side, it had this, that was on the left side. And then on the right side, it had, you know, that we were in drive. And then it had this circular graph that was showing our power usage. So it would, there was like a baseline. And then you, when we were using power, it would go up. And then we were doing the regenerative, it would go down to below the baseline. And it was kind of showing you how much power you were using at any given moment, as well as your historical trend for, I don't know, like the last 5 miles, I think it was.
Yeah. I mean, just like so much more information available to you to know what's going on and control of that. And like we've been talking about through the entire show, you know, the fact that this is software means that all of those are customizable. The UI of those will change, you know, being able to tell you what's going on. I mean, even when I was doing backing up, it changed a bit, and sort of some of the instrumentation changed to show me exactly how many inches I was from the nearest object. Like all of those UI components are contextual, and those are, you know, not model specific. They're shared across all the vehicle platforms. So I was super impressed with that. And also the really cool thing is that it's automatically looking at the speed signs, speed limit signs. And so anytime you're driving, you can see at a glance what the speed limit is. And that was a totally new experience for me.
Oh, wow. That was amazing. Yeah. I actually, so while I was doing, we'll get to the autopilot in a second, but while I was doing autopilot, I actually like took a photo of like what I was seeing, and it was the photo of the dashboard, and you can see like, I'm, you know, I'm not touching the steering wheel, and there's like a little speed limit 65 screen on this little, they have this little like 3D video game thing going on in the center console. And it shows like your vehicle, it shows the road, it shows, it actually shows where the other cars are on the road, which was fascinating. And yeah, and anyways, and one of the things on the side of that is it looks just like a speed limit sign, and it tells you what the current speed limit is.
It's super cool. And I asked the co-pilot, so where's it getting this information, just to see what the answer was. And she was saying that it a lot of people think it's over GPS because that's how some of the luxury cars in the past have done it. For their telling you if you're speeding or not.
Right, and calculating how long it'll take to get somewhere, too.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but she was saying that it was all from the camera. So the autopilot system is automatically looking and reading those signs. And we know from listening to some of the conference calls for Mobileye, which is the company that provides some of the cameras and software for autopilot, that that's only one of the signs that they can actually read. And so there's many other signs that can be read by that and that they're programming in. And obviously there's different, you know, speed limit signs in different countries. The US ones look a certain way, ones in UK look a different way. So it's reading those, and it was very good because at one point it was the last registration was 50 miles per hour, and then we crossed a 35 mile an hour sign, and within about a second or so of passing it, it updated it. So it got all of them, even when I was paying attention. So that was super cool. And also, you know, I just generally hadn't been a big fan of digital readouts of speed. But it didn't bother me nearly as much in this vehicle as it had when I've driven Priuses, with Zipcar. And I don't know if it's just the typography of it or the smallness of it, but so many of those other digital readouts seem to be so much more attention grabbing than this one. And maybe also because I wasn't as concerned what speed I was going. But I was trying to drive conservatively because I think you also, when you're on a test drive, you know you're being judged a little bit. So I was definitely nervous. I remember myself having to relax my shoulders every couple minutes. And maybe this is my own problem, but
you keep flashing back to that waiver you signed.
Oh my God. I was just nervous every couple of times. Like I'm signaling for every single motion I'm doing. So, you know,
if I'm going to buy a $100,000 car, I don't want it to be one that's all smashed up. Right.
Yeah, exactly. This wasn't quite the experience, the most natural driving experience, but, But that was cool. So I think...
Did they encourage you to really like slam on the accelerator too to feel the ludicrous speed?
She was very, very gracious and was just like, drive it however you want. Like, don't worry about me. I've been on a lot of test drives. I know what the car feels like. So this is for you. So I felt like everything I needed answered or any questions I had, the co-pilot I was with was great and super helpful and wasn't too... too invasive in trying to just talk about stuff. Cause I was, you know, I was pretty focused on the car and just trying to pay attention.
Yeah.
And we didn't have any music going for what it's worth. We didn't either. Drive.
Yeah.
Since I was just sort of really trying to pay attention to what was going on. But I think the two big components were the very first question she asked when we started going was, do you want to try autopilot? And my response was, of course I do. she's like, great. So we started going, and then when we got, she's like, we'll try autopilot on 280, which is the highway here, which is has more turns in it than the 101, which is pretty straight.
And so usually a less traffic too, which is nice.
Yeah, and less traffic, and just more scenic, and
not,
higher
not
speed.
Not low traffic, but less traffic.
Yeah, less traffic for California. When we got onto 280, she's like, go ahead and accelerate up the ramp. So I accelerated up the ramp, and...
Which ramp were you on?
I can't remember which exit entrance. I think it was the
probably Arrasadero Page Mill.
It might have been Page Mill, but it was a really long long ramp entrance. So I was able to get up to speed and no. I think the biggest thing was that I was instantly at any speed I wanted to be, and usually 10 miles faster than I thought I was going, which is sort of. Just a general feeling that the car had so much more power and even not trying, you know, even in a 3 Series, you know, when the car is getting up to speed and you feel it and you know that
you have a lot of audible feedback from the engine and the gearing too, which you completely lose with the electric transmission motor.
In starting to talk about like the performance of it, the thing I kept coming back to and in thinking about it now, reflecting back, was that it was so precise and smooth that it felt more like what an airplane feels like, where it is constant pressure and speed. And like when you're taking off in an airplane, you know you're going extremely fast, but once that initial burst of being at a dead stop happens, it just feels like smooth, very smooth pressure. That's what the car felt like on a smaller scale to me, was just this instantaneous connection between wanting to go faster and the car going faster. And it almost felt so effortless that it was not as exciting. It felt so electronic, I guess, and so smooth and almost like a futuristic that... sort of on rails, like a monorail or something where it just didn't feel like a vehicle where it has that oomph and excitement and sort of roar.
Yeah, it didn't feel like it was really working for the speed that you were getting.
Yeah, exactly. It just felt so like, whatever, you want to be 70, we'll be 70 right now. You want to be 30, we'll be 30. Like, you want to go from 0 to 60 instantly? No problem. Like, it was just so powerful and so unassuming about it and graceful in a way that I was... Now looking back, it almost doesn't feel as exciting, because I've been lucky enough to drive like a 911 Porsche, and that thing, when you're driving it and pushing it fast, you feel this excitement and you know that car is working hard and you hear the engine and you just get this sort of more visceral feeling. But this thing could smoke the 911 I had driven, and it does it without even caring, and that was so cool, but also underwhelming in a way that I came away knowing I've just driven the fastest vehicle I've ever driven. It's an SUV, and it just didn't even feel that crazy, because I was in the P90D. They're all four-wheel drive for the SUVs, but it had ludicrous mode on, and I made sure we had ludicrous turned on.
Yeah, so did we.
And so when we got to a stop, I was like, can I try the full full ludicrous 0 to 60. And she's like, sure, push on the brake all the way. So we went into hold mode so the creep wouldn't happen. And then she said, just do whatever you do, just make sure you fully press on the accelerator as fast as you can, floor it, like to the floor, because as fast as you push it, the better it goes.
Did you actually do that?
Yeah, I did.
I couldn't. I didn't quite get all the way down.
So. Oh, I did all the way down, and I just literally stepped on it, and I've never done that in a car before. And my girlfriend was in the back seat, in the second seat, and I told everyone, okay, here we go, 3, 2, 1, I slammed on it, and I heard her go, ugh, because her head hit the back, and I was like, holy, I was just trying to make sure we were going straight, and I felt it in the pit of my stomach. I felt that roller coaster feeling in my stomach for the first, you know, half a second, and then we were instantly at 70 miles an hour, and I let off on the accelerator, and
yeah, that was the crazy part.
So fast. I mean, and
it was dangerous. So we were coming in when we got off of Sandhill onto 280. It's kind of a clover leaf. So you have to do this like 270 degree turn to get on 280 South.
Yeah.
And so I was probably still going about like 20 or 30 miles an hour when I did it. And I like, he's encouraging me to slam on the accelerator. And I like kind of went about like 3/4 of the way, and it was like pulling my cheeks back as we were flying in. And I wasn't, you know, I was taking it in for a couple of seconds, and then all of a sudden we're going like 90 miles an hour. Yeah. And then like, there's this dump truck like ahead of me that was going like 40. And I had to like quickly, like kind of slow down and get into the other lane. It was, I mean, maybe you get used to it, but it was a little, with great power comes great responsibility, yeah. I guess. It was a little worrisome.
And that first one I did was coming slightly merging from this sort of yield. So I was going around a slight, like I wasn't going perfectly straight. I was going slightly turn from the dead stop, sort of in this merge into a straightaway. So I was a little nervous that like something was going to go wrong, and the car just went. The car didn't have any problem with it. It was just me being nervous about going so fast. So that felt great. And then we did it again from a stoplight. I was like, can I try it again? She's like, absolutely. So we were at a red light, pressed the brake all the way in again to get the hold feature. And then as soon as it turned green, I just went and just nailed it and got up to 70. And like before I knew it, I was going 70 miles an hour. And it was just so much fun and made me smile and chuckle like involuntarily.
Yeah. I feel like the lack of any sort of feedback is what made it weird. Like the suspension was smooth enough, even though it was in sports mode. There was no like engine noise because there's no engine. And that's what like there was no. And it's faster than I would expect to be able to get to that speed.
Yeah, I've never been to that speed that fast.
I was not expecting to be going like 80 or 90 miles an hour or faster at like, you know, 2 seconds after I had started. Like it was crazy.
It was ludicrous. I mean, that is aptly named, and it is crazy fast. And the good example that I heard my girlfriend mention afterwards was it felt like a roller coaster, like the Hulk in where it's sort of that linear accelerator with the magnet, sort of like what the Hyperloop is trying to do, just so smooth and so straight.
And that wasn't even with the extra smooth suspension on too. It probably could be even smoother.
It was great.
Like we didn't have the, because there was touring mode and some sort of middle mode and then like sport mode, which is what we had it on.
The bouncier Lexus style for the folks who prefer a cushier ride.
Yeah, we had the sport mode, and he even encouraged me when we were coming off the expressway onto a clover leaf to like not slow down. He's like, oh, don't slow down too much. Like really lean into this turn.
It handled like a dream. It was so flat and smooth around all the corners. And I didn't notice any understeer or oversteer. And, you know, I'm not an auto reviewer, but, you know, when going around some of these turns into the highway entrances, you can, they're pretty, I mean, they got a little bank in them. And so you can push into it, and it had just ate it up. It just ate up those corners and had no problem. And then I'm just continually thinking, I'm in this huge SUV and I could have like 7 people in this car. And this is the most fun car I've ever driven. It just is such a juxtaposition of concepts of a utility vehicle that is the fastest vehicle I've ever driven. Was just so strange. And compared to an S, I really couldn't, you know, being a few months removed from driving the S, I couldn't tell any difference in the driving conditions. And every time I've driven a minivan or an SUV before, I hate it. I absolutely hate the slushiness and the bounciness when you're turning. Yeah. It just is not fun to drive. And even when you hit on the brakes, you can feel the whole chassis sort of tranche forward as it lunges into trying to brake itself. So it was really
fun.
Are you
driving a minivan or a stair car?
No, I am not the Bluth stealing a stair car. A 1998 Dodge Caravan is not a fun vehicle to drive as a 16-year-old, but you make do with what you got.
Yeah, better than no vehicle, I guess.
So the other thing we did on the highway was autopilot.
Yes.
And what do you think of autopilot now, having experienced it?
I think that, so we got into this, $100,000 crazy SUV with amazing acceleration and the wraparound windshield and the ludicrous acceleration and the great handling, and all of that paled in comparison to autopilot. Autopilot was far and away the coolest thing. I went on a test drive for 40, I think we were out for at least 45 minutes, half
yeah,
hour.
Yeah, I was out there for 45 minutes for sure. It's the same.
I would say for the majority of the time, I wasn't driving the vehicle, which is a really weird experience to go test drive a vehicle and not actually drive it. And my co-pilot was very nonchalant about the hands on the wheel thing too. He's like, oh, it's going to bug you every now and then to put your hands on the wheel. But if you just put a little bit of weight on it, it'll shut up for a while. So
I mean, you even took a photo.
Oh yeah. For the most part, I did not have my hands on the vehicle. I was all in, full YOLO on letting this thing drive at 75 or 80 miles an hour down 280. It adjusts to the speed. So if you set it to a target speed of 75, say, and someone's in front of you, it'll slow down. You tap the turn signal and it'll change lanes for you. And
you changed lanes too?
Oh yeah. Multiple times. I spent probably 25 minutes or more, just letting it drive down 280. Well, down and then back up. And while I was doing that, I was asking him questions about the car and getting things explained. But yeah, it was amazing. I think it was fun to watch at first. It was really exciting. I'm like, oh my God, this thing's driving itself. It's slowing down. It's merging. It's
tracking
around corners.
Were you nervous in the beginning?
For the first 30 seconds, I'm like, oh, this is kind of worrisome. Is this going to work? And it was a little challenging to get it engaged because I hadn't done it before. And there was the little stock on the bottom or little lever on the
behind,
the steering stock that comes out. And you have to it's not the little one, but the bigger one. And you have to tap it twice. And there's little indicators on the dashboard that light up blue that tell you that it's controlling cruise control and then steering control. So you tap it once for cruise, what would traditionally be cruise control, where it just manages your speed, and then you tap it again and it takes over the steering as well. It was wonderful. It handled everything. It didn't get confused. I mean, this was 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a sunny day in California. So this is probably as optimal as it gets.
They pretty much would film the commercial at that time.
Yeah. But I mean, there was traffic around, and like I said, there was a couple of dump trucks that got in my way, and it was just normal highway traffic. It handled completely fine. And I thought the craziest part was that after a couple minutes, it was boring.
Mm-hmm.
It went from being the coolest, most incredible thing that I've ever experienced in a vehicle to being boring. Yeah. To being oh, okay, well, now it's driving, and let's tell me more about the supercharger network. And it was fascinating how quickly it became routine and expected. Now, next time I get in my vehicle, it's going to be weird that it's not driving itself.
I totally agree. I got to use it on the S a few months ago, and I was extremely excited to try it, and I'd heard a lot about it. And so we got on the highway, and I was in a lane that seemed reasonable and everything was going fine. And I had been told you double pull the stock, and I'd seen the gray wheel and the other gray symbol to indicate it was ready. And I double pulled, hear that nice little chime, and the lights on the indicator in front turned blue, and it starts going, and I sort of felt the wheel move underneath my hands for the first time, and that was extremely weird. And then I let my grip completely loose, and my foot was off the gas, the accelerator, and it just started taking over. And then I saw that there was a curve coming up, and I kept my hand very close, a little bit nervous on the wheel to make sure it turned. And then this thing just starts turning, and the only thing I could really think of was those remote control cars they use in movies when they can't get a stunt driver in it, and like watching those behind the scenes when it's a RC car behind.
The steering wheel starts moving.
Yeah, and the steering wheel starts moving by itself, and thinking as a kid that was the most amazing thing to imagine a car could drive sort of by itself or by a pilot remotely without someone actually, you know, turning the wheel. It is kind of weird that the wheel actually turns, right? Because they could have done it where the wheel doesn't turn.
Right.
But they do. Anyways, that was so cool. And then, yeah, within a minute, I was like, this is instantly new. This is the future. There is no doubt that I want autopilot in my next car. Every time I drive since then on the highway, I wish I had autopilot. And
let's be honest, like for me, autopilot was doing a better job driving than I was.
I mean, I swerve quite a lot on highway. I mean,
well, especially here, because I was having a conversation about the car too, so I was distracted, and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is clearly better. It keeps much better distance, a safer distance all the time. And the other thing is, I felt like I didn't need to go as fast because I didn't care.
Right.
I didn't set it above the rated speed limit. So when I turned it on, it just went 65. And I think I was in the right lane or the second lane, and I was just sort of moving between them. And I was perfectly happy going 65. And I'm usually very impatient going at that speed because you have to deal with cars merging in and cars slowing down and speeding up. And so when you're doing that as a driver, it's not fun. So you want to be in the cruising lane and just go at your own speed. So that was a total change, having so much more sort of comfort in it. And yeah, I think if you haven't experienced it, how quickly you feel comfortable with it and like it and want it was really clear. How accurate it was and how satisfying it is to see all these little other cars passing you in the visual display and seeing how timed they are to the actual vehicles passing you gives you a lot of confidence that the thing knows what's going on. And that it actually sees the lane so well that even when things were starting to get a little wacky and dashed or missing, it still was able to keep locked on. It was just so great that I wanted to be an autopilot as much more than I could, because she sort of intimated that they only wanted you to try it on the highway.
Right.
So when we were on more surface streets, it was ready to go. Like when I was, it was almost prepared for autopilot all the time. And it just sort of reminds me back to those impressions of when I got to play with the iPhone on the first day in June of 2007, and I touched the screen. I was like, this is it. It was what I expected and wanted it to be like, and what they had sort of promised in the keynote. And driving autopilot was the same feeling for me as touching a first multi-touch display on an iPhone of, oh my God, this is actually as good as they said. And this is the future. There is no doubt in my mind that autopilot style features are going to be the future. And people have talked about this, but like, it is so much better and more useful already that I can't imagine buying a car now that doesn't have it if I have any choice in the matter. And that's why I, you know, have a Model 3 reserve. But that is the single most valuable feature to me, for sure. Yeah. Like you said, like I would get rid of the performance. I would get rid of the interior. There's so many things I would get rid of. If I had autopilot driving on the highway, like that's it. That is the feature I care about. That's the killer feature.
Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing. It was, I already suspected that autopilot was going to be kind of a slippery slope thing, which I suppose we'll get into in our upcoming autopilot episodes. But I think that as soon as you actually try it, it's just obvious that you don't want to have to drive. Like it's going to be, well, it's a slippery slope. Like you're just going to, once it's driving, you get confidence in it. Once it's going on its own, you just don't want to have to be bothered with it. It's like,
but even how valuable it is now, just the current level, it's so many technologies are shown off before they're ready. So many technologies are vaporware or so many caveats that only in the most ideal conditions is it useful. And this thing is imminently useful right now on highways that, who knows? Like, it doesn't matter. It's just like whatever road where there's regular painted street sides.
Doing it on like a wide expressway with, you know, moderate traffic. But
on Sand Hill?
Yeah. Well, on 280 off of, okay, like between like Sand Hill and I think down to Foothill Expressway, which mm-hmm. is down in Los Altos. which is getting a little geographically specific, but it's, you know, about like 10 miles or so of kind of 10 lane highway through the hills, I guess.
Yeah.
But then on the a bunch of miles to the east is 101, which kind of goes along the bay and is way more congested. And we didn't actually get to try it, but it sounds like autopilot would be even more useful for that, where you can completely take your mind off of the horribly annoying stop and go traffic that is endemic to 101.
Yeah, I mean, the stop and go component, like the big reason I'm excited for it is sometimes I drive down to LA from up here in San Francisco, and that drive, as you know, is not fun. It is not exciting. It is not particularly a vista full drive. It is boring crops just driving straight for 6 hours.
And I guess the real test of autopilot is, would you be comfortable taking Route 1 along the coast with autopilot driving?
I guess I would, but I wouldn't care at that point. Like, I wouldn't. The reason I would take Route 1 is for to make it more exciting for me.
Yeah, because you could look around.
Yeah, exactly. But this time I would, you can shift 5 to 10, 15% of your energy away from managing. Don't hit the car in front of you. Don't hit the car in front of you. Let in the car that's shifting over. Like, make sure you're not too close. Like, oh, it's slowing down a little bit. Slow down. All of that constant processing that's going on in your brain, you can now shift to listening to a podcast or an audiobook or having a conversation. And
or recording still, a podcast.
Yeah, we should do one with autopilot.
But that'll be awkward for the co-pilot from Tesla that's in the vehicle.
Don't worry, we're just recording a podcast. Don't say anything unless you want to be recorded.
Yeah, could you keep it down over there?
We're trying to record in here. Can it be any quieter? But yeah, like that whole idea of being able to shift a little bit of this like very low level processing that you're doing and constant stress of, you know, why is traffic stressful? It's very low speed. Like, who cares? It's that constant stop and go and having to put so much more input into the vehicle that autopilot takes that all away. I mean, I wish we had some stop and go traffic because it was pretty empty and smooth, but I would love to see it go all the way down to zero. And I've seen those on the videos.
Book a test drive for rush hour.
Yeah, be like, I'm going to just drive it on El Camino all the way.
the other thing I thought was interesting about autopilot was how it still gave you control over some things, which I think are probably unnecessary, but probably there to just give you the illusion of control. Like, I mean, you could set the speed, obviously, which kind of relates to cruise control, but really at a certain point, you don't need it, right? If it's reading speed limit signs, it can just go. The other thing I thought was kind of odd was that there's a UI where you twist the little stick and it sets how many car lengths you want to leave between you and the car in front of you, which I thought was a really oddly specific thing to allow it to do. Like, I think the car should just travel at a safe distance and who cares? But I guess if you really want to make sure no one cuts in and stop and go traffic and takes your spot.
Boston, for instance, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that was a little weird. Probably maybe that's just kind of a vestige of being in control, and that'll probably go away. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the other big thing for me was I don't know about you, but I don't use cruise control that often on trips. I just find it so finicky. Yeah, I find it really finicky to get into, and I end up finding myself just manipulating the stock on cruise control. I don't have adaptive cruise control, so I know some vehicles do, but the car I drive most doesn't. And so I end up managing the speed anyways, and I always feel like the car is more likely to hit someone in cruise control because it doesn't give a shit. Like, it's just going. And so if I don't pull the speed down or hit the brake, it's just going to do something I don't expect.
Right.
So I feel unless there's like no one around, I don't turn cruise control on. And with autopilot, I didn't have that feeling at all. I wanted to keep turning it on as much as I could. And you mentioned it's a little bit tricky to turn on in the beginning, but once you've done it once or twice, you totally get it. And it's so easy. You just double pull that stock on the left-hand side and you're in autopilot. And that was just so great how easy it is to get into and how confidence inspiring it is. And you just tap on the brake or take control of the wheel and you're overriding it. So autopilot is two thumbs up. I highly recommend, like they say in Ferris Bueller, if you have the means, you should get a car with autopilot. And I think that's the number one feature I will upgrade on the Model 3 for sure, is making sure it has autopilot.
Yeah. Yeah. It just reinforces my belief that self-driving cars are the future and they cannot get here fast enough.
The one other little last tidbit I thought was really cool, and I don't think you got to try it, was auto parking. And
no, I didn't, no.
Yeah, so auto parking, I hadn't got to try it on the S, so we found a parallel parking spot near a park, And so we tried that, and I've never used any of the cars that have auto parking, parallel parking in them. So it was a new experience for me. I know some vehicles have it already. So we found a spot. It was pretty big, so it wasn't a tough challenge for it. But we pulled up past the minivan, and this really took advantage of all the screens. So the screen right in front of me showed that it had a little P sign in a circle that looked like a parking indicator. So it knew it could do it. And then on the center screen, I tapped a button to start the parking process, and it said, okay, we're going to parallel park. Are you okay? And you click okay on the center screen. So you're not touching the steering wheel or anything. You're actually interacting with the center console to do it. You click it, tap it rather. And my initial impression was, oh my God, it's going pretty fast. Like it started backing up really fast. And I felt like, oh my gosh, this is too quick. Like I don't usually back up that fast into a parallel parking maneuver. Cause who knows? Like I don't know.
You're not that elite.
I'm not that elite of a parallel parker, and the car is elite. It was backing up quickly. But it had way more like cool visualizations around the sides of where the sonar was. And it also drew the spot in like white chalk, sort of like a dead man sort of police outline. So
that's probably not the analogy they would use.
No, probably not. That's why I don't work for them. So in the in the central view right in front of me, I could see that, and I could see where the car was going into it. So it had mapped, you know, exactly where it was going, obviously.
Did it have those same like yellow pulses?
Yeah, it has the pulses, and then it sort of sucks itself into it. And it did a flawless job. Like it backed up and then it pulled forward because there was so much space in the spot that it wanted to leave space behind it. So then it pulled forward and then it just stopped. And I was like, okay, we're done. And it was perfect. She's like, it always parks 8 inches off the curb or 6 inches off the curb and 8 inches from the front. And like she said, sometimes it parks so well that I can't even get out because it can park in such tight spots. But it was really impressive, and my girlfriend was also very impressed with that. And, you know, a lot of times around here we have to parallel park or in San Francisco, and so that was another feature, part of the autopilot sort of suite that was like, yes, please. Like, I would love that. I would love backing and parking, like any parking maneuver. It clearly is going to do a better job than a human could in most cases. So that was another just like really impressive, very well executed. And from a UI point of view, was extremely easy to use and confidence inspiring as, you know, the passenger, or I guess now I was the driver, but not really, sort of watching
We're all
this
passengers.
Thing. Yeah. Watching this thing happen. So that was really cool too.
Cool. So I guess everything has been pretty positive so far. Did you have any cons? Do you have any drawbacks that you noticed, through? I'll say that I thought that the interior, the fit and finish, I thought felt a little cheap, especially having test driven a bunch of Audis and BMWs and the Lexus even. I feel like the materials were just of a higher quality, or at least appeared to be a higher quality. The Model X, like the little slide tray in the center console, was already broken in the test drive one, and we couldn't get it open. There were just a few little things like that where it just felt like I guess the fit and finish just didn't feel up to the level it should be.
Yeah, I think I agree. I don't think it's as plush or posh as a lot of the vehicles in its class, and certainly for $100,000 plus vehicle, it doesn't feel like those do. You know, being in a Mercedes, high end Mercedes, every once in a while, or you know, whatever. You definitely, they have a different opulence to them that the X does not. And also to the fit and finish, when we were getting a tour of the trunk and the seats folded down, I could see sort of the wire cabling going into the seats that were powering them. And the carpeting wasn't quite cut perfectly. So I agree. I feel like the plastic didn't feel as high end as the plastic. Yeah. Like it felt more like a plastic you'd expect in a mid-range vehicle. And I think a big cover for that though is that the screens, the center console screen and the center screen, take up a lot of the space that traditional automakers use to show off the high-end nature of the vehicles. You know, the feel of the knobs and the inlays and things like that. So I don't think they have as much space to improve. I mean, they don't have as much surface area that they need to do with those high-end materials.
Yeah, and I should say that as I was driving it, like I noticed this right away. And then other than the fact that the little door was broken when, then that was towards the end when I was trying to play around with the compartments, that I mean, I didn't notice the autopilot and the screen. I mean, everything was great and that's what really mattered, but it just felt a little, I don't know, incongruent.
Yeah, I agree. And when I was driving it, I didn't care at all. So I agree that they definitely have room to grow there. But I expect it's going to be a lot like the copy and paste issue for the iPhone. Like, it's a minor annoyance, but you have an iPhone and that'll get fixed. And I feel like of all the things that Tesla has to solve, that's probably pretty low on the list. And they're clearly selling enough of these. And if they kept this level for the Model 3, I'd be very happy.
Yeah, I guess the question is, how does it wear too? I mean, it looks kind of cheap, but then there's the question of does it looking cheap mean that it is cheap? And then in 2 years, it's going to start, like, you know, the chrome's going to start chipping off the plastic, or is plastic's going to break, or the little doors are going to break. That'll remain to be seen.
Yeah, I didn't do a super deep inspection of the vehicle, and you know, I've seen them I need to go back and take a deeper look at it, but I don't like the current very personal, but I don't really like the headliner suede that they use. I don't know if you notice it, but it's sort of this faux suede in the area on the sort of A pillar, and then also on the front when you're looking forward into the dash. It just sort of looks like you can see fingerprints in it and swirls, and it just holds a lot of motion in the fabric. But apparently they have a different headliner option, which is more sort of traditional. But anyways, yeah, I'm trying to think of anything else. I mean, yeah, the Falcon Wing doors are impressive and fun. But one of the downsides that we noticed was if you're trying to get into the back seat, it's easy to get in. As Elon Musk has talked about, but it's hard to get out because there's no handles to pull yourself out because there's no door frame. So if you're in the very back seat, you're far back. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a huge opening to get out of there.
You can't, there's nothing to hold on to. And so we were in the showroom just playing around before, and we couldn't easily get out of the vehicle from the very back seat. So that was a little bit like, there really should be some handles to help people get in. Actually, to get out of the back seat. I think the seat was extremely comfortable. I was very happy with that, so no complaints there. The temperature of the vehicle is fine, even though it was sunny and the big windscreen, so I don't think that's actually a problem.
The storage space was pretty good. Like, the frunk had an awful lot of space in it.
And yeah, the frunk was big. The back wasn't so big with the rear seats.
Yeah, it had a little tiny trunk behind the seats.
Yeah, I'm not even sure you could get a full-size piece of luggage width-wise in there.
No, and it had the adapter cables for the various charging stations
on the ground. So that, I mean, I understand why that is, and I'm not currently in the market for that, but I could see that being a concern for people, just not enough luggage space. If you really have 5 or 6 people in that car and you're going to the airport, that could be slightly a problem. But I'm sure that's... Other people will be more equipped to talk about that, but
yeah, that's an edge case of edge cases right there.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, I think overall the experience was very good, very high marks for the overall experience. And when we were done, we were asked, so do you want any, you know, anything else to drink or anything? Let me give you my card and if I can help answer any other questions. And if you'd like to, we could set up you know, go over to the computer and sort of spec out a car, but I know you guys aren't currently looking for one. So just let me know if that changes and we can help you out. So it was extremely low pressure. Didn't feel guilty about doing a test drive just for educational purposes. And they didn't hound us to, you know, give them more information or, you know, tell, you know, make them believe we were going to buy a car right now. So from the sales experience, I was very happy with that. And we felt left very happy and excited and, you know, telling people really positive things about it. So I would say if you haven't been able to do a test drive and you live close enough to a store to go do one, I would book one online and go do it because it's super fun and they're very happy and nice people. And they're you can just tell them it's just to try it out and learn more about the car. So
yeah, it didn't feel like a high pressure sales commission environment. And then as if like having the car drive itself for most of the trip wasn't futuristic enough, as soon as I walked out of the store, a robotic mall cop drove by me, which if you're not familiar, which I guess no one probably is, the Stanford Shopping Center has literally robotic mall cops that look like Daleks that just kind of roam around the store and have like cameras and sensors all over them. So it really felt like I was living in the future right there.
That's pretty cool. So I think that about wrapped it up. Any closing thoughts?
No. I echo exactly what you said, that that there, you know, cons, like the cons were minimal, and it was a fantastic experience. And I only want cars that can drive themselves.
So does it make you more likely to want to have a Tesla, or are the realities of the price and the real world going to make you buy an Audi or, you know, a Subaru or something like that for your next car? And any changes in perspective on your next car?
I don't know. That's an interesting question, because I'm not the primary purchaser of this. I don't drive very often. And it's a question of what's available now versus what will be available in 2 years, I guess, when the three's out.
Yeah.
So, who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, it made me interested in getting more invested in checking out the CPO, the certified pre-owned ones. But I realized that most of the ones that are on the market are older and don't have autopilot, so I'm not interested.
Right,
and
that's the autopilot ones.
Yeah, so like I don't care. Like I don't care that it's electric, really. I just care that it has autopilot. So, you know, the $70,000 or $80,000 price point for the S or X that would be used is still too rich for my blood. So I think I'm going to keep holding on to that Model 3 reservation. But definitely excited to have driven one. And it makes me want to actually rent, you know, a Model S for a road trip to take for a longer trip. So I think that might be the next thing in my future. Yeah.
You can travel for free with the superchargers. That's one thing that my co-pilot and I were joking about, is that if you remember back to the old episode of Seinfeld where Kramer hatched the plan to take the bottles for the 10-cent deposit to Michigan, and he was stymied by the price of gas to get out there. If you actually have the superchargers, you might actually be able to fill up your Model X with bottles to return to Michigan for 10 cents, and the economics might work.
Or a mail truck on Mother's Day.
They have a fifth truck, you know. Yeah. All right.
Cool. Well, if anyone has any comments or wants to share their experience with their test drives or their Model S's or X's, you can leave us a note on our Reddit page, r/TheTeslaShow, or you can tweet at us at The Tesla Show on Twitter. And otherwise, we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, look forward to hearing everyone else's experiences about this.
Cool. All right. Talk to you later, Mike.
All right. Bye.